summoned from their experiments in the higher reaches of pleasure, to bring their ageless heads into a world of rain and failure. He had worked ceaselessly in the preceding week to prepare the room for them. The bare boards had been meticulously scrubbed and strewn with petals. Upon the west wall he had set up a kind of altar to them, decorated with a kind of placatory offerings Kircher had assured him would nurture their good offices. Bones, bonbons, needles. A jug of his urine, the product of 7 days' collection, stood on the left of the altar, should they require some spontaneous gesture of self-defilement. On the right, a plate of dove's heads, which Kircher had also advised him to have on hand. He had left no part of the invocation ritual unobserved. No cardinal, eager for the fisherman's shoes, could have been more diligent. But now, as the sound of the bell became louder, drowning out the music box, he was afraid. "Too late," he murmured to himself, hoping to quell his rising fear. Le Marchand's device was undone. The final trick had been turned. There was no time left for prevarication or regret. Besides, hadn't he risked both life and sanity to make this unveiling possible? The doorway was even now opening to pleasures no more than a handful of humans had ever known existed, much less tasted. Pleasures which would redefine the parameters of sensation, which would release him from the dull round of desire, seduction, and disappointment that had dogged him from late adolescence. He would be transformed by that knowledge, wouldn't he? No man could experience the profundity of such feeling and remain unchanged. The bare bulb in the middle of the room dimmed and brightened and dimmed again. It had taken on the rhythm of the bell, burning its hottest on each chime. In the troughs between the chimes, the darkness in the room became utter. It was as if the world he had occupied for 29 years had ceased to exist. Then the bell would sound again, and the bulb burned so strongly it might never have faltered. And for a few precious seconds he was standing in a familiar place, with a door that led out and down and into the street, and a window through which, had he but the will or strength to tear the blinds back, he might glimpse a rumor of morning. With each peal the bulb's light was becoming more revelatory. By it he saw the east wall flayed, saw the brick momentarily lose solidity and blow away, saw in that same instant the place beyond the room from which the bell's din was issuing. A world of birds, was it? Vast black birds caught in perpetual tempest? That was all the sense he could make of the province from which, even now, the hierophants were coming, that it was in confusion and full of brittle, broken things that rose and fell and filled the dark air with their fright. And then the wall was solid again, and the bell fell silent. The bulb flickered out. This time it went without a hope of rekindling. He stood in the darkness and said nothing. Even if he could remember the words of welcome he'd prepared, his tongue would not have spoken them. It was playing dead in his mouth. And then, light. It came from them, from the quartet of Cenobites who now, with the wall sealed behind them, occupied the room. A fitful phosphorescence, like the glow of deep-sea fishes, blue, cold, charmless. It struck Frank that he had never once wondered what they would look like. His imagination, though fertile when it came to trickery and theft, was impoverished in other regards. The skill to picture these eminences was beyond him, so he had not even tried. Why, then, was he so distressed to set eyes upon them? Was it the scars that covered every inch of their bodies, the flesh cosmetically punctured and sliced and enfibulated, then dusted down with ash? Was it the smell of vanilla they brought with them, the sweetness of which did little to disguise the stench beneath? Or was it that as the light grew, and he scanned them more closely, he saw nothing of joy, or even humanity, in their maimed faces, only desperation, and an appetite that made his bowels ache to be voided.
"What city is this?"
one of the four inquired. Frank had difficulty guessing the speaker's gender with any certainty. Its clothes, some of which were sewn to and through its skin, hid its private parts, and there was nothing in the dregs of its voice or in its willfully disfigured features that offered the least clue. When it spoke, the hooks that transfixed the flaps of its eyes, and were wed by an intricate system of chains passed through flesh and bone alike to similar hooks through the lower lip, were teased by the motion, exposing the glistening meat beneath.
"I asked you a question,"